Time passed. How much time, I did not know. It might have been later in the day, it might have been days later. I wasn't hungry, I knew that. All sustenance was drawn from the incredible energies that Vera had unleashed within me. The real world, such as it was, had lost all meaning to me because it paled in significance to the overwhelming glory that was Vera Wang Ho. All I knew was that eventually, an eternity later, I was lying in darkness. My eyes had adjusted somewhat to the lack of light, and suddenly a full and true comprehension of my vulnerability flooded into me. I reached out, grabbing for where I thought the demon sword should be. And there it was. The sword plus my other weapons, my staff, even my clothes, all in a tidy heap upon the floor. She had taken nothing. This evil woman, this woman from whom I had expected betrayal, had taken nothing of mine. Of course, there was always the consideration that nothing of mine would have been of much benefit to her. She couldn't use the demon sword without the magic words that she thought I knew. The rest of my weapons were useless to her as well. She could have tried to torture me for the information, but considering the power I had ascribed to the sword, she might well have been bringing her own doom upon herself. So she had loved me, or at least made love to me in ways that I had never experienced. Whatever connection I felt our souls had made, it had been solidified and grown through the physical contact. Gods knew I was no virgin, but I had never, ever encountered anything like the techniques that Vera had used. Or perhaps it was something as simple as that we had bonded on an emotional and spiritual level in a way I had never had with another woman. Except, now what? There, in the darkness, my mind began to wander. Wandered towards a conclusion that I couldn't say I was enjoying drawing. I had no idea whose side I was on anymore. It had never been a question in my life before, because the answer had always been the same. I was on my side. I didn't give a damn about anyone else. There was me, my considerations, my concerns, and that was it. The rest of humanity could go hang. That hadn't been happening in Chimpan, however. Instead, ever since I had come to this infernal country, I wound up forming alliances with or developing feelings for just about everyone with whom I'd made contact. And every single alliance I'd formed and feeling I'd had come a cropper, had been disastrous. I should not have been surprised at this. Not a cynic like me, not someone who always expected everything to turn to shite. Yet I was indeed surprised. There had been the people of House Bayou, the gentle, sweet, loving farm people, who, as it turned out, used the bodies of their departed enemies to help their crops grow. There was my teacher, my mentor, Ali, the man who had had me engaged in involved exercises and lessons that I had conceived myself all led to some greater purpose. Except if what I now learned was true, he hadn't known a damn thing about self-defense. This entire annihilation thing was just rubbish. Something he'd developed to cover the fact that he was a fake and a charlatan, dependent upon a demon sword to dispatch any serious threats. Then there was the princess. The one whom I had thought I had come to know, despite a rocky beginning, only to discover that she was part of an overly amorous cult of shadow warriors plotting to bring down her own father. And as for her father, well, actually, he was the least disappointing of the lot of them. At least I'd known going in that he was something of a loony. Even when he was busy calling me his friend and expressing satisfaction, I knew that entire relationship could come apart at any time. And Vera, my soulmate, my lover, my eventual betrayer. That had to be the case. Sooner or later, somehow or other, she would betray me. Between the fact that she was already heading up a criminal organization and my own tendency to hook up with women who stabbed me in the back at the first opportunity, it was only a matter of time. I had wanted to begin a new life in Chimpan. I had wanted things to be different here, but they weren't. Because of me. As much as I enjoyed blaming the gods or fates or writing off the rest of humanity as base and pointless, I was being brought face to face with the realization that unhappiness followed me the way disease followed rats. I had found myself in the midst of a life and death political struggle that would have immense consequences for all concerned. And I simply didn't care. The princess was a shadow assassin. The Imperial wanted to kill me. The criminals were bleeding criminals. The innocents had dark secrets. My lover would probably betray me. My teacher was probably a sham. And if the evil and probable betrayer could be believed, had died of natural causes. Oh, and I had in my possession a weapon of deeply destructive power. Except I didn't know how to use it. But people who would likely kill me as soon as look at me thought I did know how to use it, which was probably the only thing keeping me alive. And those were my allies. What the hell was I doing there? What was the point of any of it? It was madness. Madness! Here, I had endeavored to become more a part of the world, and instead I was more detached than ever before. In Asteria, I had known the dark, unpleasant underbelly of the Order of Knights who were so revered. Because of my own foul conception, I knew that the principles of chivalry were a sham and a joke. So here I had come to Chimpan, to a far-off land, handed a new and fresh start by the gods, and discovered a people who claimed to elevate honor above everything. Yet not a single one of them appeared to be motivated by honor at all. Instead, it was merely a pretext to do whatever the hell they felt like doing. Everyone here was just as self-absorbed and vicious as anyone else I'd ever met.
I've got to get out of here.
I realized that it probably hadn't been especially bright for me to articulate that intention. But then I listened very carefully for some indication of soft breathing in the darkness. Nothing. Vera was gone. Gone as if she was never there.
Vera!
So where did that leave me? Depressed, naked, and in the dark. I began to shiver as if the shadows were permeating my skin. This was certainly alarming, considering that one time shadows really had permeated my skin. It was enough to motivate me to dress quickly and get the hell out of there. I was back out in the incredibly narrow street. I knew exactly what I was going to do. With all the evils I was faced with, I was going to return to the least of them. The people of House Bayou might not have been what I expected them to be, and Ali might have been, well, a fraud and a fool, but at least they weren't actively trying to kill me, which put them several notches above everyone else in the damn place. I was going to go back to the farmers. I would live as one of them for as long as I could, hopefully forever. With any luck at all, I would seek solace in the anonymity of the village. Would the Fork Tong come after me there? There was always the possibility. Then again, there was the possibility they would come after me anywhere. On the other hand, perhaps there was something in Ali's personal effects that contained the words that would activate the demon sword. And if I wielded its power, why then... Then I could defend the village. I wouldn't use it to seek out power for myself. I wouldn't use it to conquer. It would simply be for defense, and ideally I would never have to use it. But if I did, then it was a necessary evil. And that would be a nice change of pace from all the unnecessary evil I had encountered in my life.
You want to leave?
Vera's voice seemed to come from right beside me and everywhere all at the same time. I was quiet for a long moment. I considered all the lies I could tell at that point. But I was tired of lies. And for someone like me, for whom lies had been his mother's milk, that was a remarkable admission to make. Even for myself.
Yes.
My shoulders tensed. I braced myself. I wasn't sure what. A reaction? A torrent of rage? A blow to the back of the head? Something.
Very well.
Pardon?
Very well, you may go. We of the Forked Tongue are patient. We do not require all our goals to be met immediately. When you leave this place, do you think you can find your way to the West Gate?
I think so, yes.
Go there. The forest is near. Enter it. Go 50 paces. A horse will be waiting for you. Do what you need to do.
And what if I don't come back?
If there is something you love, you must be willing to release it. If it returns to you of its own volition, it will never leave you again.
You are saying you love me.
I'm saying go. All else can wait.
How do you know when you truly love someone?
Have you never truly been in love?
I don't think I ever have, no.
The way you know, apropos, is that the welfare of your partner is more important than your own welfare. You elevate their needs above your own. Are you capable of that?
Another question which almost screamed for a lie. Yet once again I spoke the truth. I don't know.
Nor do I. So I suppose this will be a chance for both of us to find out. Farewell, my love.
Thanks to all my caution, my trip back to the village of Hans Bayou took considerably longer than it should have. However, better to prolong the journey than to make a mistake that either lengthened my time indefinitely in jail, or worse, cut it short with the blade of the executioner. At that point, where it felt as if I would never get there, I saw familiar landmarks along the road that alerted me the village was nigh. I also noticed something else, however. Something that I couldn't help but consider very, very odd. Crows. I had not seen many of the black-feathered creatures since I had arrived, which was probably why I noticed them at that point. It was broad daylight, and thus I was staying off the main road when I spotted crows in flight. First it was singly, then time passed and a group of 5 flew past. Then 10, then later 20. It was almost eerie watching them hurtle past. And what was even eerier was that they were heading in the same direction I was. I took a chance and moved out onto the main road, reasoning that I might have a better view of what lay ahead. What I saw bewildered me at first. Crows were coming in not just from behind me, but from other directions as well. And they were converging like a great feathered funnel of ill wind. They swirled around one particular area, some miles ahead of me. My horse bucked slightly, clearly unhappy with my warning it to head toward the area where the crows were gathering. That was when I realized. The area the crows were gathering roughly corresponded to where I thought the village of Hans Bayou was situated. And still I didn't fully comprehend. Then it hit me. A horrifying, nauseating realization struck me in the gut with the force of a mallet blow. Suddenly I didn't give a damn whether I encountered the Imperial's own bloody army on the road. The only thing that concerned me was getting back to Hans Bayou as quickly as possible. Ignoring the horse's protests, I snapped the reins. Phew! It was a beautiful day. Sun bright and cheery. Not a single white cloud blocking the pure blue sky. How could anything possibly be wrong on a day like this? The answer lay ahead of me. As I drew within a mile or two of the village, I could see that the skies were black with crows. They were cawing and summoning to more of their kind, a huge indigo whirlpool. There was no incentive for them to behave in any other fashion. If creatures such as they had brains to reason, they would have thought, "What's the rush? We have all the time in the world. In fact, the longer we wait, the tastier our pickings." It was at that point that the wind shifted and the smell wafted to me. A smell I knew all too well. I charged down from the small range of hills that stood between me and the village, and that was when I saw the first of the bodies. It was Cleft Chin, of course. I could just imagine him standing there, fists on his hips, shouting defiance, demanding that they, whoever they are, leave this place at once. It cut him down right where he stood. Then they moved on. There were more bodies. Bodies everywhere. Bodies of every shape, every size, every age, every gender. No one had made any effort to bury them or hide them. They'd left them there as a warning, as a boast. It was at that point I heard screaming, which made my heart leap because I thought that it might mean that there were people alive. I realized belatedly that it was my own screaming I was hearing. I wasn't aware when I had started it. I did know, however, when I stopped.
It was when I stumbled over Kitchenette's body. Oh, there had been others. Over there was Double Chin, half in and half out of her hut was his wife, Lun. And the others, so many others, cut up, lacerated. Some had their throats slit, others were beheaded. Still more were stabbed in the heart. All of them. Every damned one of them. Even as another name, another villager would occur to me, I would discover him within his hut, or behind a bush, or in a stable. But when I came upon Kitchenette, the screaming stopped. My mind stopped. Everything stopped. The sweet child who had been my salvation when I first arrived was lying flat on her back upon the ground. A crow had just lit upon her forehead. I was about to pluck out one of her eyes. Other crows were approaching, apparently considering Kitchenette to be a particular delicacy. Without thinking, I pulled out one of the scythe from my belt and hurled it as hard and as fast as I could. I doubt I could ever have repeated the throw. The scythe lanced straight through the crow, knocking him off Kit's head and pinning the thrashing bird to the ground. It managed to squawk in protest and then shuddered and died. The object lesson was not lost upon the other crows, which immediately took wing. I didn't care about them. I wasn't even noticing they were gone. The crows above continued to circle, but wisely did not approach me. I staggered toward Kit, and when I got within a few feet of her, my legs gave out completely. That didn't stop me. I tossed aside my walking staff and crawled the rest of the way to her. Right up until the moment I got to her, even though I'd seen that damned bird perched upon her forehead, I nurtured the idea that maybe, just maybe, she had survived. But no. I could see the deadness in her eyes. I reached over, felt the cold skin. I noticed her mother lying 10 feet away, her throat cut. That was when I realized there wasn't a mark upon the little girl. There were, however, tear stains. Her face was covered with them. So was the front of her clothes. As Chimpan Ali had died of heart failure, so too had Kitchenette. But it was a different sort. The child had seen death, carnage, dismemberment, saw the end of innocence, the end of her family and friends and childhood, and she had cried until she could cry no more, and then her spirit had simply departed her body. She had died of a broken heart. Carefully, I laid my pack down, reached into it, and withdrew the small stuffed bear that I had purchased for Kit. I laid it upon her lifeless chest. In my imaginings, it cuddled against her, waiting for a girlish hug that would never come. For all the shite I had experienced in my life, all the difficulties I had endured, I had always wondered, was it possible to discover a low point? To experience something so horrifying, so fraught with hopelessness, that one could simply go no lower. In the village of House Bayou, filled with slaughtered farmers who are waiting to be food for crows, I found my answer. I hit bottom. My world blew apart. In the plains of Wuin, I had reached a point where I did not care if I died. Here in the remains of a farming village, I transcended that. Not only did I not care if I died, I didn't care if I lived. I cried until I was exhausted, until I thought I could shed not another tear, and then new waves would come and it would start again. How long I sobbed, I could not tell you. But then, very slowly, I became aware of something. I turned my head and looked up at a far ridge. 7 men on horseback were there. Even from that distance, I could see they were Hamon Rai. They had come for me. They had found me. I didn't give a damn. I hadn't even accepted that she was dead yet. I was in shock, unable to wrap myself around the concept, so I ignored it. My eyes red from tears, I held her so close, and I sang gentle songs to her. The Hamonrai thundered toward me, perhaps feeling that the way to prevent me from running once more was to be as screamingly loud as possible. I think they thought I was going to bolt. They were probably looking forward to the chase, and were just a tad disappointed that I was doing nothing except staying exactly where I was while rocking back and forth. Their approach did have one benefit. The racket scared away the crows. The damned scavengers lacked relative privacy in which to conduct their grisly work, and so distanced themselves from the scene in favor of a time when there would be fewer people around to disrupt the proceedings. The Hamonrai slowed a distance away and came to a halt about 20 feet shy of me. I continued to ignore them. I must have looked quite the sight to them, seated on the ground, cradling a dead girl, cooing a tune to her. I didn't even look up at them, probably because they were of no relevance to me. At that point, even I was of no relevance to me. They dismounted, little bits of dust puffing up under their feet. I finally afforded them a glance. They were certainly fierce-looking, these seven Hamonrai. Their scowls were like thunderheads, their wide shoulders swaying, their swords slapping against their thighs as they walked. Any one of them could have cut me in half with one sword thrust. Against the seven of them, I had no chance. I was all right, though. I wasn't seeking one. They stopped several feet away. It was as if they didn't want to get too close to me, lest they catch the odd illness that had reduced me to a simpering, useless sack of meat and bone.
You are Paul?
I nodded. No point in denying it. His asking me was just a formality. Who in the hell else looked like me?
Did you do this?
We questioned them. We demanded to know your whereabouts. They would not cooperate.
What made you think they would know?
That one.
He pointed at the body of Cleft Chin.
Spoke to others of the strange-faced one named Poe. We traced him here.
That fool. That gossiping fool. Couldn't keep his mouth shut when he'd gone to market. Had to blab about what he knew. And look at what the result had been. Just look.
And you? You just came here and killed them all. For no reason.
We questioned them, and they did not cooperate. They would not tell us where you were.
They didn't know. I wasn't here. They couldn't have possibly known.
They did not tell us that. They did not tell us anything. They said it would be dishonorable.
Oh, my God.
I held Kit tighter to me.
Oh, my dear God.
For what it is worth, they held you in very high esteem.
It's worth nothing. Nothing.
You are correct. In seeking to honor you, they dishonor themselves. Their loyalty should be to their Imperia, not to a strangely faced outsider who brought dishonor to the Imperia as well.
So you killed them. Killed them all.
They brought their deaths upon themselves. We were simply the instruments of those deaths.
No, I was. I brought this on them. This is on my head. Mine.
The Hamonrai stared at me for a time. Then the leader turned to the others and gestured that they should gather around him. They held a hurried, whispered conference. What were they saying was of no consequence to me. I was stroking Kit's cheek. I wondered why I wasn't crying anymore. It was probably because I'd used up all my tears. They broke ranks and turned to face me.
If you wish, you will be given one chance to do the honorable thing. It is, frankly, more than you deserve.
My mind should have been screaming at me to try and seek vengeance upon these cold-blooded bastards, or desperately trying to find ways to run away. But there was nothing. My inner voice, my first best line of defense when it came to survival, was silent. Well, that was certainly a hint, wasn't it?
Yes, Yes, it is.
I eased Kit to the ground and stared at her. Then I gently arranged her hands so they were crisscrossing her chest. Her eyes were still open, so I passed my hand over her lids and slid them closed. I leaned back upon my knees then and gripped the Tashi sword. The demon sword, they called it. And I thought, fine, let it do the work of a demon. Let it send me to hell. I pulled the sword from its scabbard. It was as if I was drawing a phantom sword. The entire moment had slowed to a crawl, as if the final moments of my life were going to be as painfully prolonged as possible. The sword seemed deliriously sharp. I knew it would be no effort at all to shove the blade into my heart and pierce it. My life was over. As far as I was concerned, it was over the moment I set foot in the village and saw the first corpses. The Hamunrai seemed a bit surprised, as if anticipating some sort of trick.
You do not resist?
No. I turned the sword around, placed the point against my chest. It was as if I was dreaming. The faces floated before me, as they had in times past when death seemed imminent. My mother and Tacit, and Cherie and Entropy, and the men of the King's Court, and the Lady Kate, and the soldiers, dedicatedly serving the rapacious ambitions of the Peace Lord of Wuin, and King Meander, and the faces of all those who have been made to suffer because of me. An endless list, it seemed. They paraded across my mind's eye, and they all looked as if they felt sorry for me. As if they pitied me. And why not? Was I not a pitiful, hopeless thing? Was I not mired in despair, beyond help, beyond redemption, beyond anything?
Yet before, you fled rather than do honor to the Imperia. Why do you not resist now?
Because I don't care. I was telling the truth for what I was certain would be the last time in my life. And then, as I prepared to thrust the sword into my breast, it started to tremble in my grasp. The Hamunrai looked contemptuous.
He shakes in fear. Do the job for him!
I screamed. But it was not in fear. Instead, it was in pain. The hilt of the sword had suddenly become scalding hot. Waves of heat blasted through my hands, and I thought they were being incinerated. Yet I could not release the sword. My hands, in fact, gripped the hilt even more tightly than before. They were shaking, but not of their own accord. It was the sword that was shaking. All I was doing was hanging on. My teeth were chattering violently, my head snapping back and forth. It was at that point that the Hamunrai realized something was definitely wrong, and it had nothing to do with me, and everything to do with the sword. Obviously fearing a trick, seeking to end this before I pulled some sort of stunt, the leader of the Hamunrai charged forward, yanking out his sword. Intending to cut me down and end this, he never even got close. For the blade of my sword suddenly bent, twisted, distorted, and then came completely free of its hilt. There was a blinding flash of light, a discharge of energy that knocked me onto my back. I held onto the hilt as if my life depended on it, which I was beginning to suspect might be the case. It was as if a star had descended from the heavens and exploded onto the ground in front of me. And the rending and tearing, the sounds of bones breaking and flesh being torn from bodies and muscles being stretched and torn and other sounds, horrifying noises that I had known the human body was capable of producing. My vision started to clear then, and what I saw, I couldn't believe what I saw. There was a creature there. A being. A thing. It was hunched over, and thus it was difficult to determine its height. But I would have guessed it was well over 7 feet tall. It was naked, save for a tattered loincloth. Its skin unearthly white. Its arms long and dangling. It had 4 fingers on each hand rather than 5. but each finger ended in a cruel curved talon. The talons were dripping with blood and gore. And its face... It turned, glanced me over its shoulder, and its face was the stuff of nightmares. Burning red eyes, a long and pointed chin and hook-like nose. It had no ears, but instead small holes on either side of its head, and its teeth were jagged and sharp. It clicked those teeth several times rapidly. The ham and rye were scattered about the ground in various states of dismemberment. Some of them had time to draw their weapons. Some hadn't. It hadn't made much difference in the end. They were all equally as dead. I braced myself, waiting for it to turn upon me and dispose of me the same way it had them. Slowly it approached me, its knuckles dragging upon the ground. And then it went to bended knee.
All are dead. I have fulfilled my function. Are you done with me, Master?
The Master?
It brought up one of its clawed hands and I reflexively flinched back, certain it was about to tear into me.
You hold the demon sword. You are Master. Are you done with me?
What? What are you?
I am all hell. I am the Slotin of the demon sword. Destruction is mine to give. Merciless. All-consuming, all hell, the destroyer am I. You released me.
How?
You spoke the words of power. Speak them again that I may return and rest.
And then I realized, I don't care. In a flash of light and energy, he was gone once more. The hilt shook in my hand, and I squinted against it lest I be blinded once more. And then, just like that, it was over. The blade was intact once more. I no longer felt compelled to hold the hilt. I had been certain that the scorching heat had seared the flesh from my hands, but I looked at my palms, and they were not even lightly blistered. For all the intensity of the heat that I had felt, I was undamaged.
All hell, the destroyer.
A Slogan. I had never heard of such a creature. Obviously, some sort of demon spat up from the netherworld, bound within this mystic sword. This was the means by which Chimpan Ali had annihilated those thugs. He had spoken these words of power, the words that I had now uttered, and that consequently caused the destruction of these soldiers. My mind whirled back to when I was training with him. I remembered how I had been about to say, I don't care, and he had warned me away from doing so. Now I comprehended why. Even though I wasn't holding the sword at the time, he didn't want to take any chances that the words would trigger the unleashing of the demon. I sat there for the longest time, just staring at the blade. I turned it this way and that, looking at my reflection in it, imagining that the creature within was looking back. Vera Wang Ho had told me that Ali was a fraud, that he knew nothing of true disciplines, that he had just been trying to cover up his own ignorance by wasting my time with pointless lessons. There might well have been some truth in that, and yet I now realize that much of what he had told me had basis in other truths. The exercises might have been mere distractions, in hopes that my interest would wane and the fact that he was a fraud would never come to light, but the basic precept he had taught me was completely true. I had emptied myself of everything, and because of that emptiness, I had been able to annihilate my opponents. Granted, I had required a magic sword to do it, but hey, destruction was destruction, was it not? Destruction.
I don't care.
Even though I was braced for it, the force of the energy unleashed still knocked me over. I shook my head to clear it as the Slogan stood over me, staring at me with fierce intensity. I thanked the gods I was the one holding the blade, or at least the hilt of the blade, because the prospect of the creature tearing into me was a horrifying one indeed.
There are none to destroy. Why have you summoned me?
I do not desire to leave the bodies of these people for the crows.
I don't do birds.
All right. The Slogan wasn't the sharpest quill in the ink. Well, that was acceptable.
No, not the birds. Can you burn the bodies? Reduce them to...
The Slogan's mouth opened wide. jet of blue flame erupted from his mouth. He swept his head back and forth, and within seconds, there was nothing left of the villagers but small piles of ash. He turned and looked at the bodies of the Hamunrai.
What of them?
Leave them. Let the birds pick them clean, and I hope they take their time doing so.
May I leave?
I don't care. And he was gone again, the blade intact once more upon the hilt. I stood there for a time, running the options through my head. A tremendous change had just come over my world. A change I wouldn't have thought possible mere minutes ago. I had been ready to die. I had wanted nothing but sweet, sweet oblivion, because I had been convinced that in this world there could be no justice. No love without betrayal. No life that did not end in tragedy. No hope. Except I had found hope. Hope and a tool that gave me the potential for as many casualties as I cared to pile up. That was what I was holding. The ultimate weapon. It was nothing less than that. Nothing could stand before it. Seven men, seven powerful armed soldiers, part of the elite of this land, and the Slogan had effortlessly torn them into pieces. I had gone from being powerless to being the single most powerful individual in the whole of Chimpan. Nothing and no one could stand against me. When I had been Peace Lord, I had known invincibility. That might have been another reason why I was so utterly without hope. Having been able to accomplish everything, how dispiriting, how debilitating it was to go from that to being able to accomplish anything. That was no longer the case, though. I was unstoppable once more. How I had learned. I had succumbed as Peace Lord to the temptations of power, and as a result had become a mere shadow of my former self. That was not going to happen this time. I was not about to embark on some broad-ranging campaign of destruction and conquest. Those ambitions had no attraction for me. No. I simply wanted revenge. Yes, I know. I considered acts of vengeance to be a hollow pursuit. But that was before I actually had the means to achieve that vengeance. Now that I did, the entire concept suited me just fine, thank you very much. Revenge. Revenge upon the Imperial for the way he had treated me. Revenge upon the Aeneas Ninja for their slaughtering of my teacher. Revenge upon... Vera? Vera Wang Ho? My love? My true love. I crouched over the ashes that had been a small girl and sifted them through my hand. Then I took them and smeared them upon either side of my face, leaving angry gray streaks upon it.
This is for you.
I headed off for Takeo while the crows descended and prepared for their feast. The first time I was on horseback, I saw the riders approaching before they saw me, and I reined up my horse, angling it crosswise across the road to make it clear I was going to be squarely in their way. Not only did I not make an effort at concealment, but I threw my hood back to reveal my features. Then I drew the demon sword and waited. They came to a halt a short distance away and stared at me, apparently unable to believe their eyes. When one is hunting for someone, one usually assumes that the hunter will at least make some effort to stay out of the way. It is certainly not expected that the hunter will be waiting for you, staring you in the eye and almost daring you to make the first move.
Oh!
Yes.
This emboldened them. One would have thought that considering they outnumber me 5-1, they would have been utterly confident from the beginning of the encounter. But the unusual nature of the way I was facing them down had been briefly disconcerting. Perhaps they'd simply decided I was insane and were going to proceed from that assumption.
You have dishonored the Imperial.
So he says.
You will die for that action. You will be given one chance to do the honorable thing.
Honorable thing? There was a village of farmers. I once resided there. The entire populace was murdered in the process of being questioned as to my whereabouts. My question to you is, do any of you have any problem with that?
They exchanged looks. It could be they thought this was some sort of trick question.
This has nothing to do with the dishonor that you...
Just answer the damned question.
or are you afraid to do so?
No one questions our bravery.
Then answer me.
No, I have no problem with that. Any of you?
So you don't care?
No.
Then I don't care.
Then came the heat, and the pain that burned while not burning. My horse bucked in fear, and I nearly got myself tossed right off. Even as the demon ripped free of its imprisonment and tore into the Hammond Rye, I was busy making a mental note to myself that the next time I unleashed the demon, I had to make certain not to be on horseback. Within seconds, the small group of Hammond Rye had been torn to shreds. Apparently, all hell had broken loose, with an even greater vengeance this time. That didn't bother me in principle, although I was slightly concerned that the creature's ferocity could build to the point where I could no longer control it. But as long as I could maintain dominion over the Slogan for the time that I required its services, that was all I needed. After that, well, after that, who knew? Once my immediate concerns had been attended to, why not continue to utilize the blade? What was wrong with having a weapon that could annihilate my enemies 10 times over? 20 times over? It wasn't as if I would use it for evil or for dominance. I had already been down that road, knew the mistakes that could be made and the pitfalls to be avoided. The second time I avoided the blade along my journey, however, a problem arose, one that I had not foreseen, and yet, strangely enough, had in fact predicted. Whether it was a lucky guess on my part, or some intuition I developed because I'd been carrying the sword for a time, I really couldn't say. The incident occurred when I had decided to stop for a brief rest along the way. I was seated along the side of the road, leaning against a tree, devouring some simple breadstuffs I had in my pack. There was a peddler walking slowly down the road, pushing a small cart filled with knickknacks that swayed gently as he moved. He smiled toward me, tilting his head in greeting. I waved in acknowledgement. Then the peddler stopped, and I could see him reacting to that which, at the moment, I only heard. The oncoming of horses. 4 this time, by my estimate. Somehow I knew that it was going to be more Hammond Rye. I was right. They rounded the corner of the road, started to move in formation around the peddler, and then spotted me. They stopped, glanced at each other, silently concurred that I was who they were looking for. Then they started to move toward me. I pulled the demon sword, and much of the conversation I'd had with the previous group of would-be attackers was repeated, almost word for word. It was nicely ironic, or perhaps pathetic. I couldn't quite make up my mind which. It reached the exact same point as the other, with my uttering the magic words which unleashed the Slogan. Slow, he might have been in name, but certainly not indeed. He tore into them with the same ferocity and efficiency he displayed the previous day. I sat there and watched and smiled and enjoyed every moment of it. If vengeance is a hollow pursuit, the joy of that is, since it is hollow, one can dine upon helping after helping and never fill up. So one is always ready for the next course, sort of like an endless banquet. Technically, I suppose this had moved beyond vengeance. These soldiers, after all, had done nothing to me, any more than the set I'd encountered on the road the day before had. But my reasoning was simple. If they didn't consider the travesty visited upon the good people of House Bayou to be a crime of the First Order, then that meant they endorsed it. If they endorsed it, then it was acceptable within their code of conduct. That being the case, there was a possibility that sooner or later they would do something similar. Better than for all concerned to get rid of them before they had the opportunity to do so. But when all hell was finished with the Hammond Rye, he turned his attention towards the peddler.
No! Leave him!
The Slogan stayed rooted to his spot for a moment and looked at me with a combination of contempt and frustration, as if he hated having to explain something to me.
When I am summoned, all I see die. That is my way.
I don't care!
He staggered, twisted as if bands of invisible force were trying to insinuate themselves around his body. He took several more steps towards the peddler and then turned and faced me with obvious frustration.
Beware of sending mixed messages from mixed emotions. Lack of focus may well be the death of you. End of others.
The Slogan vanished back into the sword. The blade was intact once more, although I could have sworn, looking upon the blade, that I could see the snarling face of the demon reflected in its polished surface. Then it vanished. The peddler was lying on the road, trembling. For a moment, I thought he too had dropped dead from stress or something similar. But no, he was fine, albeit shaken. I went to him and extended a hand to help him up. Instead of taking it, he pulled away from the offer of help, as if my hand held some great disease in it.
You could thank me for saving your life, you know.
Shall I also thank you for endangering it?
Well, it was a valid enough question, I suppose. But it still annoyed the hell out of me. I knew then that what I had told Vera Wang Ho was correct. Once the demon was unleashed, bottling him up once more could present a problem. He would attack indiscriminately, killing everyone who was in his immediate field of vision. And he was not at his best when being made to obey orders that involved holding back. This required a slight rethinking of my original plans regarding the Imperia. Demons are, by their nature, not to be trusted, and this slow gym was no exception. It was clear that I could not simply ride up to the outside of the palace, unleash all hell, and tell him to fly straight as a crow to the Imperia and dispatch him for me. The odds were far more likely that all hell would annihilate not only the Imperia, but everyone else in the palace, every servant, every woman and child. Yes, even me too. And all of that mayhem, blood, and destruction would be on my head. Well, fine. That was hardly an impossible problem to deal with. I would simply have to make certain that the Imperia and I were in the same room, and no one else who could remotely be considered an innocent was. I was prepared for that. Really, I was prepared for anything. I was prepared for my mission to be a success. I was prepared for it to end in bloody failure. All of it was the same to me, for I had lost the capacity to care about anything. Except Vera. Vera Wang Ho, the mysterious woman who had so fascinated me, captivated me. I wondered whether what I felt was genuine. Was it all motivated by some desperate desire to experience that which Mitsu had made sound so tantalizing? The embracing of a soulmate, the dizzying rush of love at first sight. No. No, I was convinced it was more than that. There in the darkness we had come together, bonded in ways I had never thought possible. What we had done transcended mere sex. We had not simply been using each other for release or benefit or to try and maintain a particular rank. We were two soulmates uniting as one. How pathetic that must seem to you. After all that I've been through, to find me capable of the same giddy, pathetic failings as others who are far less cynical than I. How disappointed you must be in me. Oh, apropos, what were you thinking, you must be demanding? Where is the unsociable, alienated fellow we've come to loathe and despise with the fiery passion of a thousand suns? You have succumbed to a pathetic, obsessive love that could befall any foolish, callow hero. You disappoint us, apropos. You have truly let us down. Have I? Have I let you down? Ah, well. Why should you be any different from everyone else in my life? I was expecting a welcoming committee when I entered Tekyo. Such was not to be the case. I moved through the streets on horseback, my back straight, my head held high. I saw that I was being recognized, pointed at, discussed as I rode past. It gave me a sense of smug superiority. I also noticed something else rather interesting. All the wanted posters had been taken down. The only conclusion I could draw was that Vera Wang Ho had instructed her skanky friends to take them down because... why? They offended her sensibilities, perhaps? Or maybe they wanted to make it a bit easier for me to move about the town. Well, I wasn't planning on a lengthy stay. I knew exactly where I was going, and although I was not 100% certain of what I was going to do once I got there, I had enough confidence in my abilities to think quickly that I felt I'd be able to figure it out. I briefly considered heading toward the dark side of town to see if I could seek out Vera. Ultimately, I decided against it. Best not to prolong matters. I have business with the Imperia, and I could see no advantage to putting it off. The palace loomed in front of me. I headed for the towering bridge that would carry me across the moat, bracing myself for possible difficulties in terms of getting in. I saw several Hammond Rye guards ahead of me, at the entrance to the bridge about the same time they saw me. There was a quick, excited talk between them that I didn't quite understand. As fluent as I had become in Chimpanese, I still had difficulty comprehending it if two or more natives were uttering it at full speed among themselves. Between the excitement in their voices and the distance I had yet to cover between us, this was one of those occasions. I drew within range and stopped. As I looked down at them from atop my horse, my hand started to wander towards the hilt of the sword. The magic summoning words were poised upon my lips. And then the guards separated, the four of them stepping two to each side, allowing me full access to the bridge. To make matters even more curious, they bowed. I didn't know what to make of that. A bow was a display of deepest respect. Why would they be displaying respect for me? What possible motivations could they have? I was expecting them to, at best, announce that I was their prisoner, and they were to bring me before the Imperial at once. If they had done so, I would have willingly accompanied them, since to the Imperial was precisely where I wanted to go. If they had attacked me or tried to divest me of the demon sword, I would have been prepared for that as well. It was not my preferred course of action. I didn't desire to tip my hand too soon. Why alert them to my possession of a devastating and irresistible weapon before I'd set foot within the palace proper? But this response on their part was just strange. Nevertheless, I was hardly in a position to ignore or dismiss it. So I bowed in reply, snapped the reins, and headed the horse over the bridge. And now I could see others peering out the windows, or stepping out onto balconies and pointing. My return to the palace was definitely not going unobserved. I wasn't certain, but I thought I even saw the princess standing in one of the balconies and looking down upon me. Did she know what was to come? Was she expecting the assault? The mayhem that I was preparing to inflict upon some of the palace's denizens, including her own father? I had no way of knowing. I certainly hoped she did, because otherwise, she was in for one hell of a shock. Even as my horse strode across the bridge, I also kept careful watch for archers. Perhaps the plan was to try and pick me off from a distance. The thought made me squeeze tighter the hilt of the demon sword, so hard that the carvings of the bird's folded wings and the hilt itself were pressed into the flat of my hand. But I saw nothing. No threat was presenting itself from any direction. We crossed the bridge and got to the main entrance. There were a number of Hammond Rye waiting for me, and the only way to distinguish them from the Hammond Rye who had been trying to kill me during my sojourn was that these were bowing. I dismounted and, slapping my hands against my thighs, bowed in reply. They seemed quite delighted by the quality and depth of my bow, so, naturally, they bowed again. At which point, I bowed again. This went on for a couple of minutes, although it actually seemed more like forever. Apparently realizing that this could occupy the rest of the day, one of them indicated to the other two to cease what they were doing.
The Imperia is expecting you.
Is he now? Somehow I tend to doubt he's expecting what I'm prepared to give him.
I allowed the Hammond Rye to serve as escorts into the palace, even though I certainly knew my way around well enough. My horse was taken away to be housed in the stables. If their intention was to isolate me, they were succeeding. But their success would be short-lived, as would indeed everyone who tried to get in my way. It could not have been easier. It was so easy, in fact, that I was starting to feel guilty about it. I had some passing familiarity with quests or adventures, and this one involved such lack of risk that it was like consulting the memories of all those that had gone on and died upon quests. But then I thought, why not? After everything I've gone through, why shouldn't something be easy one time? I deserved a fragment of luck, did I not? We went straight to the throne room, and there was the Imperia, much as he'd been when I first met him. He sat upon his dragon throne and was watching me with steady, warm eyes.
Halt!
The Imperia rose from his throne, came down off the small platform, and walked toward me. There were personal guards standing about, but no one seemed especially concerned. That was incredibly odd, considering I had enough weapons upon me to cut down the Imperial where he stood.
Paul.
To my shock, he opened his arms and wrapped them around me. My hand was against the demon sword's hilt in readiness for an attack. This might have been many things. A trick, the act of a demented mind, but an attack it definitely was not.
Oh, my boy, it is good to see you.
He stepped back and steadied himself.
Forgive a grateful old man's sentimentality. It was brilliant. But why did you not tell me?
I had no idea whatsoever what to say in response to that. My hand slipped off the hilt of the demon sword. The Imperial didn't appear to notice or care. He was oblivious of any danger. His personal guards actually seemed pleased at the insane interaction that was occurring. I felt as if I were hallucinating. None of this made any damn bit of sense.
Tell you?
You do not have to respond. I know why. And I suppose in some ways I had it coming. For so long I have held myself up as the Divine One, the one who is told by the gods what is to be, what is to come, and all that is. Yet if that were really true, I would have known instantly the true nature of your plan, the brilliance of its execution. And you knew that. Because of that, you did not tell me. Perhaps you counted on me to know because you thought me to be omniscient. Or perhaps you were testing me. And if that is the case, then, dear boy, I have truly been found wanting.
He stared at me, looking briefly puzzled.
You are pinching yourself very, very hard. Why are you doing that?
It is a traditional gesture for self-congratulation in my country.
Ah, well, go question other traditions. All they do is make our own look sane in comparison.
He was walking in a small circle around the room.
And to think, I believed it would be some sort of insane mistake, a miscommunication caused by ineptitude. Instead, it was a dazzling, brilliant defense maneuver, the greatest in the history of Jinpan. And it is all thanks to you. Had I only been the truly omniscient individual you taught me to be, or that I wished me to be, I would have defined your intent, and a great deal of aggravation could have been avoided.
I think you're being too hard on yourself, Divine One. There is no way you could have known, and I suppose I could have been more forthcoming. Really, I cannot dismiss my responsibility in this matter.
Well, all I can say to you is that it worked to a far greater degree than I think anyone could have possibly expected it to.
Certainly beyond mine.
I heard a bustling at the doors at the far end, and for a moment I tensed, thinking that the true attack was now to be forthcoming. That they had endeavored to put me off my guard. But no, it was merely the Imperial's counselors, with Ito Isi leading the way. They were all talking at once, rendering it impossible for me to understand exactly what any of them was saying. It was clear, though, that they were all echoing the Imperial's words of praise. Except I still had no clue what the hell I was being praised for.
I must say, Honorable Poe, on behalf of the Council, we wish that you had taken us into your confidence when you conceived your brilliant plan. But since you chose not to, we respect your wisdom in this matter. We collectively wonder, though, how did you come up with the idea?
The idea, Itsu?
Yes, the idea. For the Great Wall.
The Great Wall?
Of Jinpan, yes.
Oh, the Great Wall.
I was doing everything I could to act as if we'd simply had a mere communications error, rather than that I was just now learning about the brilliant strategy I had supposedly unilaterally developed.
Yes, of course, the Great Wall. Well, I studied the situation and tried to discern just what we needed, and I thought, ha, well, obviously only a Great Wall will do the trick. Now, obviously, I've been somewhat occupied in the past days, so I couldn't monitor the situation myself.
They gave each other grim, almost accusing looks, silently admitting that they themselves were the cause of my being occupied.
So I have to wonder how exactly did the Great Wall work out in regards to the situation, I mean?
Better than even you could have anticipated. I wish you could have seen the effectiveness with which it halted the Mingo hordes. How did you know they were coming?
Oh, my gods.
Ah, well, gentlemen and Divine One, that is a most interesting tale. The Mingo hordes, they were, in fact, in leagued with the Forked Tong.
The Forked Tongue sought an alliance with the Mingle Hordes in the hopes of overthrowing the Divine One. They carefully analyzed where Chimpan was most vulnerable, provided aid, weapons, and staging areas for the Hordes, and then sat back and waited for them to do all the heavy-duty conquest.
Little suspecting that when they came charging to our borders, they would discover a massive wall, miles long. They never stopped building, Kandu and his men. They must have shared your vision.
Of course.
And since the Hammond Rai and I were so intent on trying to find you, no one was paying attention to Kandu. They kept building the wall, and building, and building. They're still working on it, you know. I have authorized continued work on it. All the materials, all the funding they need to build a wall that will block Chimpan from all invaders all throughout our borders. Good walls make good neighbors, I say.
Yes.
Would that you could have been there to see the culmination of your vision, Po. The battle was spectacular. We suffered no casualties at all. There were the bewildered Mingles slamming up against the impenetrable Great Wall. They tried to shatter it, to climb over it. None of it did any good. And there were our people atop the wall, pouring down hot oil upon them or loosing arrows. The Mingles' casualties were astronomical. The ground ran red with their blood. Their corpses were as numerous as grains of sand upon the beach. It was one of the most splendid sights these old eyes have ever seen, and we have none but you to thank for it. A man of true vision, a man of wisdom. Why, after such a shattering defeat, when they doubtless thought we would be easily conquered, it is likely that the Mingles may never recover. We may well have heard the last of those harassing barbarians. What do you say to that, Po?
Huzzah?
The Imperia rested a hand on my shoulder.
Young Po, you have earned more than a seat on my council. You have earned a place at my right hand. Go Nogo is gone. Until now, he had been my most trusted advisor. Yet he was so blinded by his hatred for you that even he was unable to fully grasp the subtlety of your genius. You will take his place.
Imperia?
What?
I stepped away from him, trying to remain focused. They were all looking at me expectantly, as if I were the wisest individual in the history of the country, about to impart more morsels of my great wisdom upon them.
Do you have any idea how many people have died because of this? Because of me?
We're still endeavoring to get a count. Thus far, the Mingo casualties stand at about...
No! I'm speaking of innocent people, people who have done no harm to any. Several days' ride from here, there's a village, or there was one, populated by innocent farmers. Your Hammond Rai came through there looking for me, and they slaughtered them. All of them. Men, women, and children.
Really? And why did they do that?
Because the Hammond Rai were looking for me and didn't feel the people were cooperating.
Ah. Well, given the outcome and our subsequent realization of how you were, in fact, not dishonoring me at all, that is somewhat unfortunate.
Somewhat unfortunate? They're dead. They're all dead.
Paul.
I was stumbling around the room, gesturing so wildly that I almost knocked myself off my feet.
The men dead, the women dead, the children dead! A little girl who never harmed anyone in her life, Imperia. If you could have seen her, held her, you would have seen the depths of depravity, the perversion that concepts such as honor have been put to. The entire concept of loyalty to the ruler of the country and the country he represents, that's fine as far as it goes. But it's being taken by those in power and used as a club to subjugate anyone and everyone who gets in their way. It's sick and twisted, and how can you ask me to be part of a ruling class that would condone and accept such horrors and dismiss them as somewhat unfortunate? It...
Enough!
Even though my chest was heaving with fury and emotion, I still halted my tirade. I leaned upon my walking staff, feeling drained and frustrated. And I thought, this is it. This is when the battle starts. He will order me dead for daring to speak so to him, and I will strike him down with my demon sword and...
A child, you say?
I was stunned by the softness of his voice. The change had been so abrupt that it was almost impossible to believe.
Yes, a little girl. 4, maybe 5 years old.
The Imperial's mind seemed to wander away. Even his closest advisors were looking at him curiously.
Divine One! Divine One! Are you all right?
Mitsu was once 4, maybe 5 years old. I was still quite angry over the fact that she had dared to be a female. For the first 4 years of her life, I did not wish to know from her. I did not comprehend how her mother could do such a thing to me. My brother, he claimed that it was my seed that had determined the child would be female rather than male. I nearly had him executed on the spot. Perhaps I should have. It might have been preferable.
There were knowing nods from the others. I did not nod knowingly, but mostly because I really had no desire to follow.
And then, one day, I saw this child dashing about the palace. I was thunderstruck. There are occasionally children seen in some parts of the palace, offspring of the staff, but they know their place. They conduct themselves quietly, with proper deportment. This child, though, she was running in circles, her arms out to either side, her head tilted back. And she was laughing, laughing with the pure joy of life. I had never seen any such thing in the palace before, possibly in my existence before, for all those who are presented to me know to bow and scrape and act in a subservient manner. I should have been outraged. Instead, I found it charming. I walked over to the child. She saw me and immediately stopped right where she was. I waved to her like this and said, "Please, continue if you wish." I thought she would be too self-conscious. No, not at all. She instantly resumed her running and careening about. I had never witnessed a human being so consumed with the sheer thrill of living. And I said to her, "Where are your parents? Your mother? Your father? Did your father never teach you proper conduct in the palace of the Imperia?" And she said, "No." And then gave this odd tittering chuckle. "What do you find so funny?" I asked her. "You know, I assume, what she found so funny."
"Because you were the father who had never taught her."
4 years old is a very magical time. I realized that at that moment. Anything is possible in the world at the age of 4.
"So you taught her? Became closer to her?"
"Of course not. That is woman's work. I had more important things to do."
"Oh."
"Still, it displeases me to consider another child at that age cut short in her life for no real reason. It seems rather brutal, does it not? Brutal and unfair."
"That's what I was trying to say."
"It seems to me that perhaps we are reaching a point as a civilization where we must reassess that which we consider important. We must reconsider what constitutes honor and loyalty and devotion."
"Imperior, where would we start?"
The others looked equally bewildered. "You could begin with rethinking the entire concept that life is cheap. You could do away with ritualistic suicide in the name of honor."
"Why would we wish to do that?"
"Because it only allows for one sort of redemption. In the land where I come from, there are many, many ways that one can go about making restitution for poor or inappropriate behavior, or even criminal action. Someone who is..."
The ironic self-reflection was not lost upon me.
"Someone who is a great villain one day can do things to benefit the public good another day. But those opportunities will never arise if the only acceptable form of penance is death."
It looked like the advisors were about to respond, but then they immediately held their peace as they waited to see how the Imperial would react. He was simply nodding, apparently considering my words.
"Change does not occur overnight. Matters that go to the very core of who we are must be weighed, measured, and considered. Even I, divinely inspired by the gods, do not turn a society on its ear overnight. But you have given us much to consider, Poe. Very much."
He rested a hand on my shoulder.
"It is difficult to know the difference between those who are dedicated and those who are friends, and those who are simply using you to achieve their own ends. Knowing whom to trust is never an easy business, Poe."
"Yes, I know."
"Come."
Although it was one word, it was immediately understood that it was addressed only to me. I followed him, curious as to what was happening. The advisors stayed behind, looking at one another, but making no attempt to ask what was going on. Ito Easy must have been dying with fury. He knew, as did I, that I had engineered no brilliant defense. The Great Wall existed through his attempt to sabotage me, but he had to go along with the perception that I was responsible lest he admit his sinister intentions. We went through a door into a much smaller room.
Then the Imperia turned to me. Although he still looked elderly, he also appeared regal and defined and quiet, quite sure of himself. If Vera Wang Ho had been an old man, she'd have probably been a lot like him, which could explain why I wanted to like the old bastard, despite everything that had happened.
There are things we need to discuss.
And we discussed them. Something told me the Princess Mitsu was not happy to see me. Perhaps it was the way she hit me in the face that gave it away. I had been given far more luxurious quarters than during my previous stay. Quarters that were commensurate with the status of someone who was the savior of all of Chimpan. I had unpacked the few belongings I had, but made sure to keep the demon sword with me, strapped securely to my belt. Granted, only I could unleash the demon within, for only I knew the words that released it, but I was certainly not going to let the best chance I had of getting out of this situation alive be stolen out from under me. I was just getting settled in when Mitsu literally burst into my room. It was not difficult. The door was made from paper. She simply smashed right through it. As entrances went, it was pretty impressive.
Oh, hello.
She sprang across the room in record time. She didn't bother to walk. She did several handsprings, propelling herself forward, and it was a miracle that I was able to get out of the way in time. I did so by throwing myself to the floor to avoid her as she sailed over me. She landed gracefully, bounced an inch or two to absorb the impact, and then whirled to face me.
How could you?
I was still holding my walking staff. I angled it in her direction as she barreled toward me, and the 4-inch blade snapped out of the dragon's mouth. Mitsu realized her mistake too late, caught up as she was in the force of her rush at me, and she twisted her body to try and prevent the impact. She failed, and her chest slammed against the end of the staff. Then she froze there a moment, not quite understanding what had happened.
You're all right. I retracted the blade an instant before it hit you.
Mitsu stepped back to see that I was telling the truth. The blade was gone, pulled back into its place of concealment. She rubbed her chest in irritation.
I should kill you for that.
I could have killed with that. I don't desire you dead.
I wish I could say the feeling was mutual.
She stalked the interior of the room, never taking her angry glare from me.
After everything we've discussed, all the time we spent together, I thought I knew you apropos.
Nobody knows anybody. We only know those aspects of others that they let us see. The true individual remains hidden from the world, and that's as it should be. Otherwise, we'd all probably want to kill each other.
That's certainly true in this case. You swore loyalty to the Fort Tong, apropos. And the next thing I know, you're accepting a position as my father's chief advisor? Why? Why are you doing that when you carry the demon sword?
What does that have to do with anything?
She dropped down onto a pillow on the floor.
Vera Wang Ho told me there was a great likelihood that you would return to the village where you found the sword. That if you didn't know the magic words that released the demon, you'd learn them there so the sword could be used to end my father's reign and perhaps force him to...
To what?
To do as the Fort Tong demands. His oppressive rule...
Mitsu, I'm still on the side of the Fort Tong.
What? What are you...
Vera's suspicion was correct. I didn't know the magic words, but I've learned how the sword works. I know what to do to unleash power within.
You know. You found out. But how did you...
By accident. The same way I suspect that Ali, my teacher, found out.
What is it? What do you say to...
No. For the time being, that remains my secret. However, you are here as a representative of the Fort Tong. So my question to you becomes, what do you wish to do now? Well, come now. We have this weapon at our disposal. I've managed to put your father off his guard. He has no idea where my loyalties lie.
Nor do I.
What would you have me do to prove my loyalty? Would you have me execute your father? I could have done so earlier, you know. It would have been no great difficulty, but you could have done that. You live here in the palace. Certainly the opportunity presented itself, as I've pointed out. Instead, what I'm told is that you've no immediate desire to do so. Why is that?
Why is what?
You call your father a tyrant, a brute. To you, he is the most evil creature that ever walked the planet. And yet I sit here now, telling you that I possess a weapon that could easily put an end to him. Why are you not interested in that?
Shh! Keep your voice down. You never know.
No, I never do.
I never know what you want from me. I never know what's truly going through your head. I never know what you or any of your shadow associates want. But I'm damn well going to find out.
Find out how?
Tonight, I go to kill the Imperia.